Well, welcome to today's podcast. As you know, we broadcast out of Bloomington, Indiana, and we welcome you to our outside view. If you remember last time, those of you that listen to us frequently, we were talking about the Bloomington, Indiana Farmers Market, which has been a tradition here for, 30 years or something. And there's been a lot of issues because there is a vendor, Schooner Tree Farm, is that
Schooner Creek Farm? Schooner Creek
Those
Farm.
People
yes, it
who
gets
are,
confusing.
White supremacists. And a lot of people, there's been a lot of controversy, there's been some confrontation. And today I want to talk with a vendor who is also a business owner. You have Primally Inspired Eats,
yes,
which is a wholesale bakery,
mm-hmm,
which sounds really yummy.
Mm-hmm.
Brandy Williams, if you would just introduce yourself a little bit so people know who you are and
sure
what you're about.
Absolutely. So like you said, Brandy Williams is my name. I'm a Bloomington resident. I've been in Bloomington for about 10 years. We were transplants from West Lafayette. I'm a Purdue grad. Don't tell anybody.
Oh, good for you. No, that's all right.
But we moved here about 10 years ago, fell in love with Bloomington, decided to stay, bought a house, started the Primally Inspired Eats business. It's a gluten-free bakery, and we really, one of the first things that we fell in love with about Bloomington was the Bloomington Farmers Market. We went every Saturday, mm-hmm, from the moment we moved, and I knew that I wanted to launch our business through the farmers market, that
sure,
we wanted it to be a farmers market business, and so that's what we did about 4.5 years ago, and it just has sort of grown from there. We grew a really good customer base from the farmers market and have branched out into wholesale with selling at Blooming Foods locations, and we sell some items in Cup and Kettle Tea Shop here in town. Once in a while we'll sell some cakes by the slice in Cezanne Mexican Cuisine, one of the newer storefronts that are open, so in places like Market Wagon, that sort of thing. And yeah, so we were trucking along
right, exactly,
until this season, and we've had a lot of upheaval and sort of a halt to our normal routine for this time of year.
Well, I think part of the problem is probably because of the city's response or kind of lack thereof. I mean, I know that the mayor, he thinks he's improving things. I mean, he's increased security,
mm-hmm,
and they've outlined areas where people can demonstrate or have little flyers and stuff, and where,
mm-hmm,
you can't and all that. But I think that white supremacy is terrorism. It's not an opinion. If somebody,
mm-hmm,
just doesn't like you, well, that's okay.
Right.
You know, they don't have to like you. They don't have to like me.
Right.
But when you are a member of a group, which these people are a member of, well, they were a member of the American Identity Movement, which is,
mm-hmm,
AIM, AIM.
Yeah,
I think that's interesting because it's also the American Indian Movement, and I think that's not a coincidence.
I would have a tendency to agree. From my personal experience of, I call myself a self-professed research junkie, and so
right,
when things come up, I just sort of just dig in as much as I possibly can, and from my understanding, that is sort of one of the things that this movement does, is they co-opt words and phrases and use them for their own in a way that is really dangerous, because I think the point of it is to basically try to mainstream their ideology as much as possible,
sure,
to make it palpable to people who are especially moderate in,
mm-hmm,
general, and because then they can run for political office and they can be a part of large community events like farmers markets and just create a normalcy around this. But when you dig down to what the ultimate goal is for most of these groups, it's something horrific. Like, their real goal is, a 90%+ all-white ethno state.
Sure,
well,
absolutely.
We all know you can't get to a 90% all-white ethno state without some sort of violence.
And well, why,
right,
would we want to?
And why would we want to? Who would want to do that? That's beyond embracing your white European heritage. Right.
Well, this country is what it is because of all the different people that have,
exactly,
been here. And these people, well, now they go by Identity Europa, I guess.
I think it's the other way around. I think it used to be Identity Europa,
but
and
Nazi.
Then they, and after the Charlottesville incident, they were attached to all of those events in a negative way.
So now
they go by the AIM. So they're constantly morphing themselves,
mm-hmm,
right? They're constantly trying to, create this.
But if you go online and
yes,
you follow some of the news stories and everything, you hear some of the things that they say. And they clearly do want an all-white country. What I don't understand is they say they want to go back to what America used to be. They don't seem to understand that when the Pilgrims and the Puritans came here, there were French people, there were French Canadians. There up in the north part of the country, there were the Vikings. In the southern part of the country, there were Mexicans, there were French, there were Spanish, and then, of course, all the Native American tribes that were here.
Yes.
It was never an all-white country. In fact, it was far from it.
Right.
And so then these people came in and set up this government and by for and of the people, which really meant them.
Right.
And, of course, the rest of us have taken that on and said, no, it applies to everyone.
Right, right.
And I'm really tired of this argument about the free speech issue, because free speech is not what they're about.
Right.
They're about terrorism. They're about threatening people. They're about menacing people. And they are committing acts of violence.
All these murders
that are going on, these slaughters,
the
come out of somewhere.
And they're attached to these manifestos that are right along the same lines of this ideology, right? I mean, that's what it's about. But I think the more you dig into them too is you find that in order to adhere to this ideology, you also have to adhere to these more fringe ideas about, I mean, I think there's even, once you start digging it, you kind of go down this rabbit hole, because it becomes like, oh, well, they have sort of conspiracy theories about Native Americans, you know what I mean? So that they can admonish the argument about genocide against Native Americans and not people who were already here. Like, they have these strange ways of trying to rework history in order to fit just a really ugly ideology, which gives them permission to dehumanize communities of people and perpetuate violence on them.
Yeah, and I used to really wonder and think about, I mean, I'm a clinical psychologist, and I used to think about why people take on a philosophy of such hatred.
Right.
And want to hurt other people.
Right.
And especially for things they don't understand. Mm-hmm. But they don't even want to try to understand. They don't want to come together.
Right.
And it's like, There's an excellent article I posted on Facebook today from The Nation about Bloomington.
I saw that article.
Did you see that?
I think The Nation, that is probably one of the best articles I have read about all of this, that I was waiting for someone to make these larger connections to other things going on, and we've lacked it in our local media. We've lacked it in, you know, even some of the larger media outlets that have written a few things, but The Nation really nailed it, I thought. I was impressed with that article.
And one of the other things that the city government and the mayor has done is you know, now there's the vendors did this, is set up a separate farmer's market. And if I were going to go to one, I would go to that one, because I would feel safer myself.
Right.
Because I've never felt terribly safe here either. Like I said, I think on a previous podcast, that I lived in Brown County, and I knew the Klan was out there, and I felt entirely frightened and scared the entire time I lived there. And it took me a little while after I left to think about how I was always ill at ease out there, and I couldn't figure out why.
Sure.
And of course, Indiana, I mean, I'm not from here, but I've been here a long time. Indiana was run by the Klan for years.
It's a hub.
It's not unusual that they're here.
Right. It's still they're still very active here. I mean, we woke up to a few weeks ago with all of the KKK flyers that were distributed in and around Bloomington, and I was disturbed by some people's attempt to minimalize that. Like, oh, well, it's just someone trying to, you know, stir the pot, or to, you know, it's a ramble rouser sort of just trying to get a reaction. But some of those flyers were specifically placed in families' mailboxes.
And for children.
Who had children of color.
Right. They want to,
you know, so that is
to frighten
intentional.
People.
That is intentional, especially in the climate that we are functioning in right now in our local community.
Instilling fear.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
Children certainly
and it
shouldn't
works.
Have to live. Oh, it absolutely
it works.
Does. Because it's made me ill. Now, I remember many years ago, I was riding around in a town. I was a college student in Indiana here. And I was up very late at night, as college students are wont to do. It was about 4 o'clock in the morning. And I began to see these rolled up pieces of paper in front of people's driveways. And so, being who I was, I got out to look at one.
Yeah.
And it was the same kind of flyer from the Klan.
Isn't that incredible?
Well, as I kept driving around, I found they were being thrown out of a police car.
Wow.
So the police were distributing them. Now, I'm not going to say what town, I'm not going to say what police, and I'm not going to say that now that police force has Klan members.
Right.
But further research, because one of my advisors was black and from this town, he said that most of the fire department and most of the police department are Klan members. I began to realize, wow, it's really true about Indiana, because I grew up in New York City, so you know, I began to be frightened then, because I'm not white Anglo-Saxon Protestant, and I don't particularly even look it, you know.
Yes.
Now, I believe, did you say on Facebook, are you mixed race?
Yes, so I'm Hispanic. My father is first generation Mexican, and my mother's Caucasian. So I've always grown up, I mean, I grew up here in Indiana, and I grew up in an all-white farming community. And, you know, as I've shared with other people, you know, I know what the grotesque language is around in order to dehumanize the Mexican community. Like, I grew up hearing those terms. I grew up having to rectify my own identity with that negativity.
Sure.
Thought I was behind that, you know, and so it's been extremely, it's been personally difficult to hear some of those same slurs and, you know, that like some of the information that, the individuals at Schooner Creek I know have been provided in the past and stuff, like have referred to people like me as mongrels, you know.
So I know the mud people,
right? The mud people. And then and then what's so offensive as well is they take the same language. And so, for instance, in the most recent Herald Times article, I think Sarah Dye may have said, you know, something to the effect that being called a white supremacist is actually a racial slur against her, and it's a method to which we are to which she's being dehumanized. And so that's another strategy, right, of this movement. They're very clever about co-opting
twisting
these terms.
The language, and twisting the language back on you.
And yes, so that becomes disturbing and
confusing.
Well,
so far she's won, as far as I can tell.
It feels that way a bit, yes.
Well, that's what I was thinking about, having a separate farmer's market. Now, we could have three or four or five farmer's markets. That's fine,
right,
as long as people can sell their things that they've created or made or grown.
Yes.
That's fine with me. But that doesn't solve the problem.
No.
That divides us even more, and that's partly the goal.
Oh,
and
yes.
So they are.
Oh, yes.
She's winning.
She is winning. And that's one reason we had. So we had the farmers market council meeting last night. And I did attend that meeting. And I did so because I wanted to clarify, because we were one of the vendors that participated and set up at the Eastside Blooming Foods this past week. We did not return to the city market. And I wanted to explain to the council members and some of my fellow vendors that were there that was not a move of divisiveness by any means. We still stand in solidarity with our fellow vendors who did choose to set up at the city market.
Sure.
It has become this unfortunate choice between livelihood and safety. And so we talked about last night that, you know, we were simply trying to hold space for individuals like ourselves who did not feel comfortable re-entering the market under these circumstances.
Exactly.
And then we were doing it in solidarity with our other vendors, but we addressed it in the council meeting because we said we really need the city to, or the council to, drop the point system for this season. Like, you do not get penalized if you choose not to be present.
I didn't even know there was a point
there
system.
It gets quite complex sometimes, but we said it's only fair that no vendor should have to choose their livelihood over feeling safe. So some vendors did go and set up last week reluctantly because they were like, I need to sell my and because they did not want to lose their point and seniority for future seasons.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a really difficult decision, and it's a difficult place to be in. So I was really grateful that they literally finally made that decision on the spot last night and said, okay, you know, we will rid ourselves of you know, there's not going to be any punishment around not setting up if you so choose. We won't do the point system this year because of extenuating circumstances. And I think that was a step in the right direction.
Well, it is, but it isn't curing.
No.
I mean, I think it's certainly been, you know, several years ago there was the Korean person that was shot.
Yes.
And actually, I was riding in the 4th of July parade that day. With, I forget who I was with now, maybe the union or maybe with the out LGBT student group.
Mm-hmm.
I was their advisor. I'm not sure which float I was on.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember when all that happened, and it sort of woke up the community a little bit.
Right.
But this issue, this is a big issue. I don't think it's going to go away this time, and I hope it doesn't go away, because it's time for this city.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been talking about it for years.
Mm-hmm.
I've been talking about it since I started at IU years in the back in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Talking with all the black students, had no one to go to at the time. There was no black culture center or anything like that. It has to make a change. The government has to make a change. The local
government.
It
can't just be with the farmers market. And that's something I think many of us are hoping – sort of catches on, that we become woke enough, because even those of us that are aware of these circumstances and have experienced this because of our own identities at various points in our life, I mean, I had admittedly had become a bit complacent. Do you know what I mean? For
sure.
Others who,
sure.
who were still suffering day to day with these sort of issues of safety or I mean, we can talk about all the unjust issues that people in marginalized groups experience, but I had become really comfortable in my little Bloomington bubble, right?
It's an easy place to live.
It's
in that
an easy
respect,
place to visit.
Yes.
So it was. We all have work to do, right? Mm-hmm. But we have to acknowledge. I think it's really difficult when you go, "Ooh, I might need some personal work here," uh-huh. along with working as a community member too. And I hope that this is just the tip of the iceberg as far as what we're willing to have the courage to tackle, because we know that this isn't just happening in our farmers market. We know that it's institutionalized, it's systematic as far as injustice and inequality, and we know that these ideologies are held by people in leadership positions and in law enforcement. That's happening all over the country. I mean, mm-hmm. I think there were some Philadelphia police officers not long ago, within the last couple months, released. Yeah, there were like 72 of them or something, mm-hmm. Because they were caught online spewing, you know, hate speech and adhering to these similar ideologies. So we have to fight back against. We can't wait for, I feel like, an act of violence to take place before we get outraged.
One big thing we really have to do is vote. We have to get rid of the governor we have in this state.
Yes.
Because there's no reason. Like, I'm thinking about, okay, there's the Schooner Creek Farm people,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
the white supremacist people, and then there's everyone else, basically.
Right.
And what do they do? They have people that come there armed.
Right.
That are walking around. But in the state of Indiana, as long as you're licensed or have a permit or whatever, you can be armed. There is no reason to have armed people, guns, at a farmer's market where there are families and there are children, and there's no reason
for
that.
It's disturbing. It's disturbing across the board.
It's ridiculous.
You point out why there's so many facets to this. It's why individuals like me, like I said, because of becoming a little bit complacent, I realize I've not been as engaged in my local politics as I need to be in the state of Indiana. I have not been giving my efforts enough. I mean, I stay informed, certainly, but I'm not giving...
Well, it takes a lot of energy and time and research to be involved.
It does.
I know I've been involved on issues over the years, in and out on different issues.
Yes.
And I mean, I spent a lot of time in the 70s, you know, as an activist and civil rights activist and feminist activist. And, you know, and then now that I'm my age, what I feel I can do really is give my energy to give people a voice.
Oh, sure. That's if we all can do our bit, right? I mean, we're all doing, I think it's a choice of whether you're showing up to do the work. You know what I mean? Like, right now, that's why I'm thinking, okay, I became a little complacent. Now I'm woke. I'm shook back to what the reality of the situation is, and I don't have all the answers. I can't do it all, but I'm here to do the work. I'm here to participate
in your
work.
Part.
Yes.
You want to contribute.
Right.
How has this affected you personally and your children?
That has been probably one of the most challenging aspects of this, because I've explained to others that the two things I think that we rely on to just have as a foundation or a springboard for us to, you know, live our best lives or, you know, have a good family life or do wonderful things with our children is you want to be able to create, you want to have a livelihood, and you want to be safe.
Sure.
Those are just two concrete things. And I mean, within such a short period, those two specific things for us personally have been rocked. I mean, our livelihood has suffered, certainly. Our revenue that we lost from the market being shut down and from traffic being down all season is significant. And most of our livelihood comes from, I mean, we're a small micro bakery. Most of our livelihood comes from the Bloomington Community Farmers Market. And we have our few wholesales and that sort of thing, but it's a huge hit. So that is a stress, you know, on a family. And then because of the way that we chose to speak up moderately when this all sort of started playing out in a public way, we've continually experienced all these sort of insidious forms of intimidation from, you know, that like one of their guards that has guarded their booth all season, we now know his name. I think he goes by like Nathan Bickle or something. And
is he armed?
I have not noticed him being armed, but there's many photos. Yes, I mean, you don't know.
There's ankle.
Exactly. There's all kinds of things. Your mind goes wild with what the possibilities are when you know that you are vulnerable and at risk. But we have pictures of him holding torches at hate rallies, right? And so little things all season long. This is just one example.
No, I've seen him on the news.
Yes. So so one day after he had been already working their booth for maybe almost 6 weeks or so, he decided they had sent him over to ask me directions to the bathroom, which, adolescent, right?
Yes.
I knew who he was. He knows who I am. The bathrooms are in the opposite direction of our booth.
Mm-hmm.
You've been working there for 2 months with people
and I'm sure he knew where they were.
Right. I mean, and it sounds so silly.
Is it intimidation or is it trying to be friendly? If they were confronted, they'd say, oh, we're just trying to reach
exactly,
out to everybody.
That's exactly how they've operated.
But when you know what someone's philosophy
right.
is and the groups they belong to
right.
and the actions they've taken,
exactly.
then you don't feel like they're extending
right.
a hand in
and
friendship.
And we're coming off of having, you know, we knew these individuals in a personal fashion because we are homeschoolers, and so we were also shared a homeschooling group for many years, and so I would have interactions with them, and so I had two disturbing interactions with them years ago.
Oh.
And one in particular was with the husband, and it was a blatant one. I mean, I think the wife is much more clever about how she interacts and mm-hmm. what she presents and how she says it, and she's much more calculated. I think he's a little bit more of a loose cannon and just sort of you know, outs himself if he talks long enough. And so I was used to, he was kind of that person you would listen to that would always be talking about conspiracy theories and all those sorts of things at a local park or something. And mm-hmm. we were at Lower Cascades Park. I'll never forget. My littlest, who's six now, was maybe two at the time. And I was open to conspiracy theories. I can chat about whatever, you know.
Sure.
I'm a let's talk.
Anything can be possible.
Possible. I'm definitely not a closed-minded individual. And I'll never forget him standing there and, you know, talking. And I can't even remember what he was saying up until, because I was watching my two-year-old also toddle around
sure.
the park, and I remember him saying, you know, Brandy, you know about Jews, right? And at that point, I immediately, he had my ear, and
right.
I thought, and I remember looking at him and sort of giving an expression of, what are you, where are we going with this?
Right.
And he was like, no, he said, they're taking over the world. He said, they have to be fought against. And at that point, I remember turning to him and being like, okay,
this is enough.
This is where let's and I won't. The next thing is he gently touched my forearm and he said, "No, Brandy, they are infested with an alien disease." And it sounds so laughable, but he was completely serious. Now, that was years ago. I never even at that moment took that as necessarily a red. I took it as, you're much crazier than what I thought you were.
Right.
I definitely won't be interacting, or I understand where you're coming from.
Sure.
You have too much time on your hands, or that sort of, because you mm-hmm. don't want to believe that it's as grotesque as how it just
as
came out.
Comprehensive.
Right? That
right.
it is. But then as everything started coming out, I realized, you know, and the other instance was with the wife, and it was a much less... It was just on the topic of white supremacy, because mm-hmm. she had been given material from a friend that she valued very much, who had given her propaganda material.
Mm-hmm.
And when I read it, it was just this, I was like, this is pretty dangerous. This is white supremacist ideology wrapped in a different package. It was kind of like had like this back to the earth, crunchy mm-hmm. sort of overtone to it.
Sure.
And I remember thinking then, oh wow, I haven't visited this stuff for a while. They're getting kind of clever, you know what I mean? Or they're really they're shaking it up a bit from the way it used to be presented.
Isn't it interesting,
you know?
The very people who think everybody else, whether it's Jews or Mexicans or black
right.
people, are taking over the world are the ones who want to take over.
Right? It's almost mind-boggling. It really is.
They're so fearful. They
yes.
live their lives so, and yet they spend their time menacing others.
Exactly.
It's it goes back so far.
It
does.
This country has tolerated it for way too long. I think many of us are at that point where enough.
Yes.
We've had mm-hmm. enough. There are far too many other things to keep us all busy and moving on with our lives.
And sharing
joyful
everything.
Things. You
sharing
know what I mean?
Sharing all the cultures. Where
yes.
would this country be without all the cultures?
I agree.
It would be so drab and boring.
Right.
And
right.
from every aspect, from music and theater to art, to
yes,
creativity,
yes.
to fashion, to everything.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. All the cultures come together to create America. And I've often said, and of course I don't see how it could happen, but you know, if they really just want their white community, just go somewhere and just be a little white community.
I've said that as well.
And leave everybody else alone.
Right. Form a commune. I don't know. Peacefully form a commune somewhere. Create your own farmer's market, for that matter. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
If you feel that, that's why I try to, there's this, that's where we make that leap from being a belief system to a terrorist group, right? Because you don't stop at wanting to just celebrate your white European heritage, right? You want to eliminate people who are not like you. In some form or fashion,
absolutely,
you want to eliminate those individuals. That's where we jump from, I think, being.
And it really is the responsibility of our governments, whether it's a local government or the federal government, which is a disaster right now. Our local government isn't a disaster, but it needs to. Well, and I know if you reach out to the governor, it's no better. Indiana really needs to get its act together and change some policies, because we should not allow, children should be able to come to the farmer's market with their parents and feel safe. They shouldn't see somebody standing over there that they can tell, children can tell, when somebody hates them.
Absolutely.
And then they become fearful. Children shouldn't have to live in that kind of fear. We have enough things to be fearful of without, you know, people.
That's been difficult to navigate with our own children. We have a 6-year-old and a 13-year-old, and the 13-year-old, and we homeschool, so we're with them a lot. So you can only keep them from so much of this ugliness, as much, you know, you want to keep as much, but you also want to want it to be a teaching moment. You know what I mean?
To where
they
teach them to be safe.
Right. Teach them to be safe. Teach them to be aware. I mean, I'm a Hispanic woman. My husband is white. So our children walk around in this world pretty much with the privilege of every other white person. And so we've talked about, what does that mean for them? What does that mean? You know, how do you become an ally? How do you recognize your role in all of this? And so that these things aren't foreign and make them feel defensive,
you know? What's really sad is that you are the key to their danger just because you're Mexican.
Right.
And it's just awful. You're their mother, and they love you, and you love them, and everybody should be fine.
Right.
It's like the speech that black people have to give to their kids about walking down the street and how they're dealing with police.
About black,
it's
especially
horrible.
With their black sons.
It's
do you know
horrible.
What I mean? We've had that exact conversation with our son who's 13.
Yeah.
The fact that this is not something that you have to carry. Mm-hmm. You do not have to carry the worry of walking down the street and feeling unsafe because of the color of your skin.
You do if you're a woman.
Absolutely.
Jewish.
Absolutely. Yeah. But as a white male, for the most part, I mean, which is how he presents to this world, you don't have to carry that. And what does that mean? And that's where we, you know, those lead us into the really uncomfortable conversations, right? Because for us to acknowledge the fact that we just have privilege based on the shade of our skin a lot in the system we live in, that's hard for some people to admit.
Mm-hmm.
It makes them defensive, and they want to end the conversation there.
Yes.
And I think that's played a role in all of this.
Somehow they think you're blaming them.
Right,
and it isn't. It's a bigger picture than that, folks. And when we have an elected, not elected, president who has always been pretty much a fascist.
Right.
And his father was a Nazi.
Yes.
And when you have that, and you know, and when you think about the powers that be that put him in office, that's what we're fighting on a really big scale, and that's why this is all coming up. But you know, I know when I would just watch TV, and I watch the news, I go watch movies, theater. All of us that are not white, that are of color, and it live, we are not going to step back.
Right,
we're not going away.
Right, that's just
nobody should.
No,
and the younger generations, I do have hope for them.
I do too. I think this is less. I'm hoping it's less of an issue, and this is where we have to be cognizant too, because I think when you look at this movement, that's one of the things. University towns are a big focus for them because they want to start pulling young white, educated males, you know, into this movement. And so there's so many different facets to this, and it's going to take a community to tackle it.
Well, from a psychological standpoint, there are certain types of white males in particular, but females too, that are vulnerable to this kind of propaganda.
Absolutely.
But, you know, there have been these strongholds, like in Wyoming, out west, in the areas that are less populated.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been a stronghold here in Indiana for a long time. And so what is everybody going to do about it? What is the government going to do about it? Holcomb cannot. He's got to face what's going on in his own state.
Right. Agreed.
It would help to get him out of office.
Right. And people, I think, And this is where maybe having the conversation, I have said so much, and it goes back to the Nation article that just came out and where they kind of pulled all of this together, because I said, it's really difficult when, I think I had a meeting with a few other vendors with the mayor and a small group back in July, and we were coming off of the leader of this country said, you know, making references to the four women of color who are, you know, elected mm-hmm. officials, and the, you know, go back to where you came from, and then seeing the rallies of hundreds of people, you know, chanting, go back to, you know,
well,
go back to where you came from.
Tell all those white people to go back where they
exactly.
came from.
But when you look at that and you say, yes. okay, those women I actually relate to. I look a little bit like them. I celebrate their victory. I'm grateful
they're
that their
great.
Voices are
they're
there.
New thinkers.
Right? And
yes.
but then you bring it back to your local community right here. And I'm going and sharing space with individuals who have a similar philosophy, right? What does that mean for me in my own community? That means vulnerability. That mm-hmm. means I am at risk of being yes. targeted by these same individuals who are going out and in El Paso and Ohio and attempting to target people of color,
well,
and
I
especially
hear people.
The Hispanic community mm-hmm. right now. You know,
right.
it's terrifying.
Oh, it is. It's awful.
It's terrifying.
It is awful. It's I just had hoped I would never see this in my lifetime, because
right.
we worked so hard
yes.
through the 60s, the 70s, mm-hmm. into the 80s to mm-hmm. turn things around and make mm-hmm. things better for everyone. And then all of a sudden, we're just going backward every day,
right.
step backward.
Right. I'm astonished at the level to which we're going backward
and
some
it's
days.
It's very terrifying.
It is.
And,
it is.
It's dangerous to stand up, but people have to.
They have to. You have to. I had said that at the meeting last night.
And I'm tired. I don't mean to interrupt you, but
no,
I'm tired
fine.
Of hearing these people, certain lawyers in town, who like to fall back on the First Amendment.
Right.
And let's turn the tables on you. Let's say you are the one that's being targeted by
right.
a group of color.
Right.
And they're saying, oh no, we have right. a right to be here because of the First Amendment. So you can live in fear.
Right. It's not a hard leap to
right.
get there. And it's called empathy as well.
Well,
you know what I mean?
And
we have a lack of empathy, I think, just in our cultural in general.
And
there are
plenty of white people who are afraid of giving up that privilege, even though they aren't like these supremacists.
Yes.
They aren't like that.
Yes, yes.
They think, well, what'll happen if there are other people in charge?
Mm-hmm.
What'll happen to
mm-hmm.
us? Well, nothing's going
right.
to happen to you folks.
Right, exactly. We're all a community,
right?
right? We're all working together. No one. I want you to, if you feel like you want to celebrate your white European heritage, go do it.
That's
great.
Sure.
I think that's fantastic. I grew up in a white culture mostly, even though I'm a Hispanic woman in an all-white farming community. I wish I knew a little bit more about my culture, do you know, or about the Mexican culture and where my ancestors and that sort of thing. I think those are normal things that we want to know about, and
sure.
I would encourage people to do that
It
makes us who we
it's
are.
It's in our very DNA.
Exactly. But why that goes, why it, again, and takes that step from that point to know, in order for me to be fulfilled, I need everyone else to be removed. At the very least. And how do you remove individuals? That's why I say, okay, so if we were talking personally, would people from that group, would you want me to leave Bloomington? Would you want me to leave Indiana?
You know what I was really disappointed about is that all the vendors that did go back to the farmers, the regular farmers market, if
yeah.
I were a vendor,
mm-hmm.
I would have stuck with the one on the east side to make a statement, if nothing else.
Right. And I think that really that's where the difficulty came. And because we have many friends that we consider family who are fellow vendors, and this has wreaked havoc just as much on them, and they have it's not been an easy decision. And a lot of that, I think, came back to livelihood. They just did not know. They were like, we have to make some revenue here, and they didn't want to lose the, like I said, the point system that
sure.
the market had in place. If they didn't participate, they would lose certain points,
sure.
and then they may not have enough seniority. You know what I mean? Going
right.
into next
sure.
season, there were all these complexities
to
that.
Well, fresh produce doesn't last forever.
Exactly. So we'll see what happens here. You know, as the now that they've made the decision to put a halt on the point system for this season mm-hmm. under the extenuating circumstances, I think that will give some vendors the breathing space, you know, to feel like they can make the choice that feels most comfortable to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that others are anguishing over I mean, we have grieved too. We have grieved for the loss of what was at that farmer's market.
Oh, it'll never be the same.
I don't think it will ever be the same. That doesn't mean it can't be something great after we work through this, right?
Change is good.
But in the middle, when you're, it's kind of like a before of an event where there's a before and an after. You know what I mean? Where I reference sometimes like when I lost my mom when I was 26, and so there's like this before and after, and the after never looks like the before, right? No. But it can be just as good. Yes. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it can be just as good. And I think I just would encourage our community members to get to that point of acceptance that there actually is going to be a before and after with this scenario,
I really think the farmer's market should go more private. That's my opinion, and the city not sponsor it.
Right.
And that way it can be controlled by...
I'm hearing that from more and... Honestly, I'm hearing that from more and more individuals that I'm speaking with.
Because since they sponsor it,
yes,
and they make the policies, and they're going to stand on the first on the free speech amendment, then it's not going to change,
right?
It's going to be constant. I think it really should. The one out at the old Kmart lot down the east side.
Yes.
That was really well attended.
It was very well attended. Yes, I think there were even, I mean, we had feedback from other fellow vendors that they had some of the best days they had the entire season.
And they were getting support from people.
But they were getting support from
people.
Those
same people that supported them may not come back to the original one.
Right. And we know that the numbers were down by half this past Saturday. And I know that the few individuals that I'm fairly close with, other vendors, felt that in their pocketbook.
Are people boycotting? See, it's also simple to economically boycott Schooner Creek Farm. Mm-hmm. I don't know if people are doing that either.
I think that there are people who are doing that. What's disturbing about that is, and I think there are some people in our community that have thought that that was the end-all be-all answer to all of this. If you will just quietly boycott them, they will eventually go away. The issue with that is they have brought their own community members from outside of this community, and they are coming in and they are buying and supporting them. I think we know, you know, I think we're pretty sure that they're being supported by outside groups and maybe don't even necessarily have the need to come to market to support themselves financially.
Maybe they can have their own farmers
market. Right. But they're in it to make a point too. I think she was quoted as saying, "We have a fighting spirit." You know, I think they are very militant in nature when it comes to this, and they look at themselves as being warriors in a much larger cause. And that is dangerous.
Well, that's the part that's fearful.
Yes.
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 That's the fearsome part of
Absolutely.
It. I just think that, you know, we have the police, we watch them in the country. They aggressively go after the homeless.
Mm-hmm.
They go after gangs, which the gang may or may not be a problem.
Right.
They go off after, you know, hate groups. They go after people.
Right.
Anti-hate groups.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
They go after anti-hate groups. They go after the protesters.
Yes.
That's who's arrested is the protester, right?
Right.
We can't go after these people that are the problem?
That's the question. That's the question at hand. And I don't have an answer to that. I have felt really discouraged by that. I've understood fully what they're saying about the First Amendment. And my answer to that, though, is this is bigger than the First Amendment, too, though. We can't just write it off as a First Amendment issue and say, okay, done for the day. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
No, we have to have the willingness to have the courage to stand up and have these deeper conversations and ask ourselves, is this covered by the First Amendment? Do we want it covered by the First Amendment? How do we navigate this in a new way? And if we don't know how to do it, then look to other communities who are attempting to do it. We are a community full of bright individuals, creative individuals. We're Indiana University. We have so many resources
here. Well, they don't
take
a stand either.
Right. Right.
Now, there's a bigger issue here that I think people aren't looking at, is that more and more, number 45 up there in the White House.
Yes.
I refuse to say his name.
I hear you.
And I grew up around his crowd. So I knew him long ago. I wouldn't have voted for him for anything.
Right.
But police state. We are becoming more and more a police state. And that's the response I see in Bloomington, too.
Yes.
Is here we have police. They're going to protect us.
Right.
No, that we don't want a police state, a police country.
Right.
And that's what's happening.
Because
that's
that comes with its own.
That's what these people are forcing.
Exactly. Right. And a police state comes with a whole other load of challenges.
Well, yeah,
I lost
a lot of family to that in Germany.
Right. Right. So, I mean, those are valid conversations to have. This mm-hmm. is where I don't wish people would not just shut down and say, well, I actually feel safer with the police. And then they're done. You know what I mean? That's in a conversation
with them. You want
police
on every corner, right, and every street. You want tanks rolling down your
neighborhood. And let's talk about how a police presence in a police state also makes others feel. Mm-hmm. Other marginalized community members
yes.
feel, because it doesn't necessarily make them feel safer, and why? And then that leads you into an even more in-depth conversation. That's what I'm asking. Have the willingness to go down this path. Have the willingness to have these in-depth, uncomfortable conversations, because mm-hmm. only if we have the willingness to do that will we find creative ways to handle these situations, the where we work at this as a community, and we're not just answering it by becoming a police state, right? I don't. That's never going to be the end all be all answer to this.
No, but that's what's happening.
Yes,
in every city, at every mm-hmm. event that's mm-hmm. being held now, mm-hmm. every concert. I mean, I remember going to concerts back in the '60s where the police were smoking pot with all the
right.
concert goers, and it was really, I mean, not that everybody should be doing that.
I hear you. Yes,
but it was a different kind of atmosphere.
And there was more of a partnership.
And there was protest. But
yes.
you know who stopped that was Nixon when he had the National Guard fire mm-hmm. on the Kent State
mm-hmm.
students.
Mm-hmm.
Stopped it right there.
Yeah.
Like, everybody
that
can be shot.
Yeah. Yeah.
And ever since then.
And that created a divide, right?
Yes.
It was us and them. And then you have that mentality around any protesters now. Even there are protesters at the market who, in all reality, every Saturday I've been there, I've watched them on Beeline, have been peaceful, pretty quiet,
mm-hmm.
Have tried to play by the rules that have been laid out before them.
Which is not going to solve any
problem. No, that's not going to solve any problem. As a matter of fact, when all of this came out, I was expecting early in the season, I thought I lived in a Bloomington community where I was going to see so many community members come out and even just hand in hand, like just take over the market, walk through the market in a sign of, no, not here.
Right, and
you
being
know?
Outraged about
and
what's
being
going
outraged
on.
Outraged
yes.
about it, but it was like crickets.
Yes. Oh,
there was
yeah.
nothing for a while until, I know so many people want to villainize Abby Ng. And Abby has single-handedly spearheaded, the protesters and organized them and had she not been courageous enough to do that,
mm-hmm.
some of us would have been suffering in silence.
Sure.
We would have suffered in silence.
She's been a powerhouse.
She
really
has been a powerhouse.
Sometimes it only takes that one person.
That's right.
But you got to keep it going. And
yes.
that's what happens with
yes.
things like this is
right.
after a while, people get tired.
They do. It's
or
exhausting.
With students, they move on.
Yes.
And then it dies down again, and everything kind of goes back to the way it was.
Right.
It can't do that anymore.
No. And that's where I said I had become complacent. Do you know what
mm-hmm.
I mean? And so I have gained courage.
Every now and then, I'm complacent.
Right. Right. I hear that. We all can get that
yeah.
way. But I mean, I have been encouraged and inspired by individuals like Abby in our community. I have felt safer earlier in the season with their presence at market.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just admire everything that she's done, and I think it is a call to action for those of us that can also help to take the baton now, because
sure.
she's been carrying that and holding that,
mm-hmm.
And we need to step up so that it's not one individual carrying all of that and becoming so exhausted that then it does die out,
As an old protester, I am so glad to see people like you, people like Abby.
Yes.
The younger generations picking up the baton, as you say.
Yes.
And carrying on. In fact, and it's even more critical now. I mean, when we were fighting for civil rights, yes, we got that done.
Right.
But it didn't solve a lot of problems.
No.
I mean, it solved only some problems.
And some people think that it did, though. Like,
oh,
I've heard a lot of people
do.
Think, oh, well, we already did that work.
Right.
That work's done.
Right. It
oh.
didn't change people's minds.
No.
You
no.
can make legislation, but
right.
you can't legislate people's minds and attitudes.
Exactly.
And you have to take a stand. Maybe you have to look at the Constitution, and maybe
mm-hmm.
you have to put some codicils on some
right.
of the amendments.
Right.
And to protect everybody.
Exactly.
But, it's the responsibility, I have to say this again, of the government.
I agree.
To protect people and care for all citizens.
Right, right. It's your basic need,
when you
right?
hire police officers,
mm-hmm.
they have to have the right mindset to police everyone.
Absolutely.
Because I've known a lot of cops. Well, actually,
right.
my son was a cop for a
yes.
while.
Yes, yes.
And they... there's plenty of them that are just out there to help people.
Of course.
To protect the community.
Of course,
and protect,
yes,
and serve. But then there are those that come in with their biases and their prejudices, mm-hmm, and they use that false sense of power.
Absolutely.
To abuse people. And you've got,
absolutely,
to weed those
and that
people
happens
out.
A lot. That happens a lot.
You have to weed them out. Right.
And that's where the city,
done.
It can be done.
Can
and
be
that's
done.
Where I hope that we have a larger initiative as a community. Let's become the example that other communities look to, right? Mm-hmm. Let's become, how do we, and I don't have all the answers. I'm not claiming that I do.
I don't think any of us
no,
do.
No, but some of us
everybody.
Are here to do the work.
Right.
Some of us are here to show up. And how do we tackle these things, like, within our law enforcement? What is it you can implement? Is there, I don't know. I mean, anti-racist sort of workshops that you have to make it through, or I mean, there could be something that seems reasonable and logical that we could implement in order to start weeding those types of individuals out. And I'm very well aware. My husband's former law enforcement, and so all too well. And he left law enforcement because it's not an easy culture to operate in,
no,
especially
not.
If you are sort of more of a woke individual.
My son left because of politics.
Yes.
Really.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
heavy duty.
I've
known some New York City cops, mm-hmm, and it's kind of a nightmare. And there's a lot of really good ones and a lot of
there
really
are.
Bad ones. And the thing is, we need a forceful voice,
mm-hmm,
from whatever leadership you're in, whether it's,
yes,
this community,
yes,
or the county or another town,
right,
or the city or the,
right,
state,
the state,
whatever.
Right.
And say, we are not going to tolerate this anymore.
Right.
I hear a lot of people say, well, we don't represent this. This isn't what we are. Yeah, it is.
Right.
This is what Bloomington's always been.
Right, right.
It's always been there.
Yes.
That element,
yes,
against black
people. And let's
people,
acknowledge
against Mexican
that.
Mexican people.
Yes.
Against gay people.
Yes.
Against,
yes.
It's been there. It's
let's
always been there.
Let's acknowledge our flaws.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Because, and I think a lot of people are trying to do that now.
I think they are too. I think there's still many
but
that
now
are
we
uncomfortable.
Need leaders,
yes,
to do that.
Yes, we do. That is what. Yes, yes.
We need leaders to do that.
Right. There's...
Say, just more than paying lip service to,
right,
this is not who we are. This is who America's always been. It's always,
exactly,
incarcerated people and beaten,
yes,
people up and killed people.
Right.
And, you know, we can just go on and on about the things that have been done to marginalized groups of people.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
So it is who we are. Let's,
right,
face that.
Right. Let's
and
accept it.
And let's don't
it.
Say, oh, I want to go back to what happened to us. No, let's fix it now.
Yes, yes,
let's
yes.
Let's fix it now.
And going back is no bad. I mean, when you say you want to go back, for individuals like me, that's frightening, you know. I have no desire to go back in, mm-hmm, any way, shape, or form. And that's not how life works. You only move forward. I,
right,
mean, that's just how this
exactly.
this goes. So you can either, like, sort of take a deep breath and accept that and be willing to move forward, or cling to what was, you know, mm-hmm, and when you do that, you're lending creed to what is happening right now. You're opening up space for individuals like the ones at Farmers Market to bring in this ugly ideology and attempt to revive it as a mainstream ideology, right? I mean, work that really sort of has had progress, you're, by allowing them to operate and continue to do this, you are taking us backward. You know, we're, mm-hmm, not going forward, and that's dangerous.
I think we need more community gatherings,
mm-hmm,
to talk,
mm-hmm,
community intervention.
Yes,
to get,
yes,
together and talk and listen to people.
Yep.
And yes, there has to be, you know, a monitoring of it so,
mm-hmm,
that nobody gets out of,
right,
control.
Right.
But we've, you know, got to listen to people.
Mm-hmm. We have to listen to each other.
And we have to have people in the leadership positions that represent and look like they represent,
mm-hmm,
everybody.
I agree. It's one step.
So I guess we have to say once again, get out and vote.
Yes.
Get
that's
out
that's
and vote.
The like the I'm interested to see. It's it'll be interesting to see what the upcoming year or so brings leading up and up to a presidential election.
Right.
And see what happens, as it doesn't seem like there's any de-escalation of what is happening right now coming,
right,
from the leadership. coming from 45, as you say.
Oh well, he's turning. He wants his. These are the people that
elect
they
him.
They think they elected him. Right. He wasn't elected, just like George Bush wasn't elected.
Right.
That's the other thing, of course, and a whole other topic of conversation is getting rid of the electoral college.
I was just yes.
And letting
yes.
people actually elect their leaders.
Yes.
And I mean, I guess you'd have to accept it a little easier if the whole country elected him.
Right.
And you
if
think,
the majority
well,
of the population. Right. Right. I mean, exactly. Maybe I don't. Maybe this isn't the place I want to be. Right. Maybe this isn't the area that I want to raise my family in and, you know, build a business or that sort of thing. Yeah. You think about, I mean, I would be lying if I said we haven't considered that, and even in regard to Bloomington, in the midst mm-hmm. of all of this.
Oh, there's a reason you know? Why so many. I know so many students that were from Indiana that
yes.
that loved it here and then left.
Left, yeah.
Left, it's, and I also know several people. I can think of two people right now that were career military
mm-hmm.
that went into academia.
Mm-hmm.
Republicans.
Okay.
Want to move.
Yeah.
Canada.
Right.
One of them is probably going to move to Canada, and the other one's, I think, moving to China, of all places, because he's done a lot of research there.
Right, right.
But they've had enough. They don't. Mm-hmm. They just don't know what to do. And these,
right.
they are white guys.
Right,
but
right.
They just don't know where this is going to go, what's going to happen.
I agree.
And they feel afraid.
Yes. I 100%. I mean, when you see the dehumanization that is taking place coming out of the White House of communities of individuals and the vitriol that is spewed, it's frightening. And from someone who is, I think, 45 is working from a space of fear and clinging. And how far will an individual like that be willing to go?
You go
how
anywhere
ugly,
for a dollar.
Right? Exactly.
You go anywhere for a dollar.
Exactly. That's frightening for people who especially visibly, are vulnerable to the risks of that sort of grotesque.
You know, you have to look at it from a bigger perspective too, that they're untouchable in a way.
Absolutely.
When people have that kind of money,
mm-hmm.
which I don't know how much money he really has. I know he owes everybody money, so I think he just goes on debt.
Right.
And I think that's the way he lives, but
mm-hmm.
it seems to be working for him. Oh, family.
Sure.
But his whole family, they've always been a bunch of crooks. Almost anybody in New York can tell you that.
Right.
And when he's out of office, I mean, they're going to go after some of them. Good.
Right.
But what damage is he going to do?
Until
then. One thing I've noticed, though, When I see him on the news and he's at one of his, rallies,
yeah,
all the people behind him look like the same people.
Right.
So I'm wondering if that isn't a drop-in photo op, that it isn't really a real audience.
I feel like at this point there's not anything that we shouldn't question.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Because we just find ourselves in such a bizarre climate and such, it's gone from being startling and bizarre to just being downright dangerous,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Well, it's dangerous for all of us.
It
I
is.
Think.
It absolutely is. And the
they
level,
get our names.
Yeah.
They get our names,
yeah.
our addresses, and everything is so easy to obtain now.
It is.
But, I mean,
it is.
I was targeted a couple of times
mm-hmm.
in Indiana, and it
that's incredible.
It's terrifying. It really is.
And they do a lot of that online. Even back to the that's one of the tools even some of these white supremacist groups use is this whole doxing someone and
mm-hmm.
you know and then trolling them however online and all these different ways in which these levels of intimidation take place.
They really have no respect for anybody. They'll hit anybody. They'll
shoot absolutely.
Anybody. Kids.
Absolutely.
Anything.
There's no yes. They think that their end game is much more important than any casualties along the way. You know?
I know. I always just wish the whole community would realize just quite how serious this is.
I do too. I think there. I have been disappointed in how long it has taken many people to get up to speed on it, and how there are still many people. I mean,
they haven't lived marginalized
right.
like you and I have.
They have not.
They
have not.
And so they haven't thought about
right.
it. But
right.
If you can get them to
And I have patience for that. Like, I do have, I understand. I do understand.
I'm older, I'm less patient.
Right? I'm trying to be patient. I'm trying to tap into about all the empathy that I can muster and graciousness under these circumstances, because I want to work with people on this. I want to work with my community members on this, and I want to work with wherever you are at with it. Just show up.
And make change.
You know what I mean?
Yes,
show up and make change. I don't care where you're at with it. If you're not too sure whether it's happening, or then educate yourself, take the time, because some of us are having time taken from us because of this.
Sometimes, you know, they might want to think you might have a grandkid,
right,
or a great grandkid that marries a black person,
right,
or marries a Mexican person,
right,
or marries a Jewish person,
right,
or maybe that grandkid is going to be gay,
right. And then it becomes personal
about,
for
you. So does it have to be on your doorstep,
right,
for
does
you
it,
to think about it?
For you to become an ally.
Right.
You know what I mean? And
yes,
you don't have to be perfect at it either. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
We're all, none of this is ever going to look perfect.
No.
It's the showing up part, I think,
exactly,
that matters.
Well, we're kind of running out of time.
Sure.
It's been great talking with you. I'm so glad that you came in today to talk and give your perspective. You want to give a little promo for your business?
So, yeah. So, again, it's just, no, I appreciate that. We need as much bolstering as we can get right now in these challenging times. But, yeah, so it's Primally Inspired Eats. We're a gluten-free micro bakery. We also offer, grain-free, dairy-free, refined sugar-free options for people with allergies, people looking to avoid processed sugar. We don't use any processed sugar in our baking. We try to use we use all local free-range eggs from Rhodes Family Farm in our baking, and wherever we can use any other local ingredients, we do. That's really important to us, and we try to keep our items as nutrient-dense as possible. And right now, we're trying to figure out how to get our products out and distributed to more of the community with everything going on around the local farmers market. So definitely Blooming Foods, both Blooming Foods locations are carrying our items. We're also on Facebook. We have a website, primallyinspiredeats.com, and our online store is currently under construction. So hopefully in the very near future, people will be able to get on, order products, and we'll be able to ship to you wherever you are. So we're really excited about that. And also marketwagon.com. We have a few items out there too.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Brandy.
Yes.
You're an inspiration. I'm so glad to know there are younger people that are as inspiring as you are.
Well,
thank you very much.
You as well.